Welcome to the Wealth Genius Podcast. The Wealth Genius Podcast. Strategies for multifamily real estate investing, mindset, community, success. The Wealth Genius Podcast with your host, the godfather of real estate, Alfonso Cuadra, who has expansive experience in business and massive success as a real estate investor. The Wealth Genius Podcast. Let's dive into today's episode.
Dahlia.
Alfonso.
Good to have you here. Love your name, Dahlia. I don't know if I know any other Dahlias, by the way.
Thank you.
Very unique. Your background?
Egyptian.
Nice, nice. So we know each other for a while. And when I thought about having our podcast and doing all our episodes, I knew at some point you would make your visit. And so now you're here. I respect you in the industry and everything you've done. You should be very proud of yourself.
Thank you.
And I want to know all about you. How did you get started in this crazy world of real estate and mortgages? And I know that you love it because you're really good at what you do. So how did it all start?
It all started while I was at corporate world. I worked for the banks for 15 years for one of Canada's top banks. I got to a level where I got to senior management working downtown in a mahogany office, wearing suits and dining and wining with executives. And I was very proud of myself back then, and I wanted to climb the corporate ladder. Then I got to a point where I got, you know, tired of politics and bureaucracies. And in corporate world, I mean, there is support for individuals, but at some point it becomes a little bit political. So I'm like, I'm tired of the politics. And at the same time, I had a four-year-old at home and I was pregnant with my second son. And I had lost money in the stock market, my husband and I. That was 2008, 2009. I was in the
along with a lot of other people.
Yeah, I was in the wealth management business in the back office, really, not advising at the front line, but supporting a lot of financial planners. And we personally lost quite a bit in our stock portfolio and mutual funds. During these days, that's when I learned about real estate, and I was sitting at my office thinking, okay, there must be a better way to actually live my life and get excited every day about what I do and have more control. And, you know, there were times where my kid would be sick and I would call in, and I felt that that was not welcome to work from home, and I had to go and get on the GO train and go to corporate. I'm like, you know what? Between losing the stock market and getting a little tired from corporate culture and wanting control over my time. And
having to ask.
Yeah, having to ask and wanting to be with my kids, I got very curious about what's out there. And that's how I started reading real estate books, the classic Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And then it became an obsession of mine. And I would go to investment clubs. I would get all the books.
Did someone introduce that book to you?
No.
You just kind of like Googled it and you're like, this is the book that I have to read, or?
I actually don't remember exactly how I came across the book. I think I found it myself. I don't remember someone giving it to me, but I just don't remember how. So my curiosity for real estate started as a result of these circumstances, and then it grew. It became a thing. And I, you know, said, you know what? 2011, I was like, okay, I'm having my second child now, and I think I should now jump into real estate. I had owned one or two properties by then, but didn't have the carriage for several years to make like a full jump.
And did you go into mortgages right away, or you were an investor first?
I was an investor first. So I started investing in Barrie. Mm-hmm. That's where I bought my first townhouse. And yeah, when I left the banking system, I had a few investment properties, townhouses in Barrie.
And was this like welcomed in your family? Was it something like, yes, you're going to do it. You can leave your job that you, your, that career that you've built for, you know, whatever many years, went to university for and all of this, and buy townhomes?
No, actually not at all. My husband was very supportive, but the rest of my family was shocked that I am giving away
security,
my nice paycheck, my prestige, you call, if you want to call it prestige, right? And they were like, why are you doing this? Why? Nobody understood. And I had a lot of friction and resistance with that move, but I just I was ready to make a change, because if you wake up every day and you feel that it's mundane and there is something that is nagging at you all the time going, you should try this, you should try this, you should try this, this nagging and nagging, that's the time.
Mm-hmm. If someone's feeling that right now, right, like what's the first move? Like they're listening and they're like, well, you know, I like what Dalia is saying, like, you know, I'm just going to make that move. And the reason I ask that is because a lot of people feel that they're kind of stuck and they got the bills every month. Because you see what the job does, it gets you used to that every month or every 2 weeks, there's a paycheck, right? And then usually your bills are in alignment with that paycheck. Your paycheck comes in. This is when the phone bill automatic debited. It's debited from your account, your mortgage, your car payment or whatnot. And so it really doesn't leave room for people to breathe. And so they're listening to you. You know, you left this corporate job. I can only imagine, you know, how cushy was that salary. And then you're leaving that behind and you're moving forward and you're betting on yourself. And so if someone's listening to that right now, and maybe you're talking to yourself, what would you say to yourself?
I would say to myself, trust your gut. Trust the power within you to make the moves you want to make. Looking back, this was the best decision, one of the best decisions of my life, to actually say, you know what? I want to pursue something that I'm passionate about, that I know I can do well at. I got into the mortgage industry not knowing much about mortgages, to tell you the truth. I didn't have any clients. I was in finance all my life in the banks in different capacities, wealth management, strategy, a little bit of lending, commercial, personal, but I wasn't part of the mortgage industry. So I stepped into an industry, as much as it's related to money, right? It's a new industry in a way. But looking back, have the courage, but also plan, right? It's not about jumping in a pool heads first and going, oh my God, or jumping in and scrambling to make it work. No, there is planning. When you have a vision of what you want to do or a direction you want to take, have the courage to pursue that, but also plan. So what did I do back then? Of course, I had a beautiful check coming through every 2 weeks. And I was pregnant with my second son. I was 3 months pregnant. So in my personal case, my husband was working and that helped, but I still had to replace my income. When you're building a business, you're not going to immediately see the fruits. My first check in the mortgage industry, I still have a picture of it, was $7,000. I worked my entire year for $7,000.
Wow.
That was my first check. And I was driving all over the place, Durham, Mississauga, downtown, like Barrie, $7,000 at the end. But how did I plan for it? Well, one way was to take a secured line of credit on my house and use that in private money. I've lined up about $500,000 line of credit back then. The rates were at 3 point something.
So you became a lender.
I became a lender. Yeah. I became a private lender.
So the transition was investor, then mortgage broker and lender, or you started lending money and then, like, how did you get into being a mortgage broker?
Yeah. So I was working in my full-time job. I took a line of credit and I started to invest in private mortgages, started to see interest come through that venue, right? And that became a cushion, right?
Yes.
And then I made the jump when I started to see a cushion. That was my style.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Not everybody would do it the same way. But when you're making a transition, I think your brain opens up to possibilities. You start to think, if you ask the right question, how can I generate income while I am building a business? If you ask that question, you'll probably come up with several ideas you may not have thought about before. For me, it was to do this. That's how I did it while I was building the business. So that carried me a little bit. And then obviously staying consistent in what I did and doing what I did well built up over time.
So when you got into the mortgage business, did you go into it thinking this is going to be like, I'm going to be known for this thing. Like I'm going to be Dalia, you know, the Dalia we see on stage. Was that the vision, or was it like, oh, I'm just going to make a few bucks to supplement my income while I do the investing?
No, it's interesting that you asked this question, because I actually made the move knowing exactly who I want to be as I stepped into this.
So
I was part of the real estate investment group, and there was a mortgage broker there that spoke on stage, and he was my idol back then. And I would look at him and go, oh my God, this guy knows so much about income properties. I wish I had talked to him when I financed my rentals, and he's educating, he's a superstar. I'm going to be the next this person.
Yeah.
And that was my mission all along, to become that person. So yeah, I went in aspiring to be that person and doing everything that I could to be on that these stages. And that's how it unfolded over time.
And how long now?
11 years.
Okay. So, you know, that's a good time in this space, right? And, you know, just for the, to give context to the viewers and listeners, what is the scope of the business? Like, what does your mortgage business look like?
So 2023, I ranked as Canada's top mortgage broker and Ontario's top mortgage broker. Over the year, we won.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. We won many awards and also ranked one of the top 100 global mortgage professionals. So very blessed that for all of that recognition. My business focuses on investment properties because that was my passion. I lost money in the stock market. I tasted a little bit of what owning a rental property is like. I'm like, this stuff works. Why didn't anybody tell me about this before? And then I became so passionate about actually building my own portfolio. And as I built my own portfolio, I learned about the hurdles of income property financing. Mm. And I solved my own problem. So I decided I'm going to go out and solve the same problem for real estate investors, which is how do you scale a real estate portfolio that helps you achieve your goals using the best source of money? Okay, so that's what my business does, helps Canadians build up the portfolio of their dreams, whether it's residential, multi-residential, a mix of both, and scale it up using the best cost of money and managing risk. Because I've seen investors build large portfolios that they've lost because they didn't manage the money structure well. So that became a passion, and I started to provide solutions to address that particular problem.
What's your favorite part about it?
I love it when I see somebody achieve one of their goals because of the work that we did. So I had clients, for example, who quit their 9-to-5 jobs. And the day they quit, they called me and they said, Dahlia, I wouldn't have been able to do this if it wasn't for the work you guys do. For me, that is very fulfilling because I love to see people elevate their lifestyle, create abundance in their life, raise their impact. That's what life is all about. We're not here to run on a treadmill, pay the bills, and just, you know, figure out how to deal with stress. That's not what we're here for. We're here to be the best we can and create abundance and create impact and elevate lifestyle and make a difference for us, for our families, for other people. And real estate is a very powerful vehicle to do so. So for me, the best part of it is to see results.
Well, I think we're very much aligned in that. And this is why we get along so well. Because those calls and the emails or, you know, when someone says that one thing that you did or, you know, you said or you helped us out with, and this is why I'm here. I live for those moments, right? So I think we're very much the same from that perspective. This is going to be aired, I would say, let's say it's spring 2024, but right now it's, you know, February 2024 when we're filming this. What are we expecting, right? Let's bring out the crystal ball here. And what's the market going to do in terms of mortgages, interest rates? You know, just recently there was an announcement in the U.S. and they talked about potential reducing the rates. And just the thought of that, already everyone just got really excited.
Yeah.
And so you've been in the game for a while. And so what I want to know is what should we expect and what should be the strategy that we're using today? And from your perspective, what do you think people should be doing right now?
So I'll answer your question in two parts. So the first part is what's ahead of us? And I fired my oracle a long time ago. And I personally follow some prominent rate analysts in the industry because they breathe that day in and day out and day in, day out. And what is becoming apparent based on the indicators is that we're closer to we are now at the peak and there is light at the end of the tunnel and it's around the corner. Because if you think about, if you listen to the last announcement by the Bank of Canada, they literally unplugged the stove. They didn't talk about the rate hike risk. They talked about the length of time the rate should stew or cook to feel its impact. So that's a shift in message. And we're starting to see the fruits of, if you want to call them the fruits, the impact of that. So, and if you look at the bond market is a leading indicator of what's going to happen with the overnight rates. And if you look at the chart, it's now trending down. Yeah, there are some upticks. There's been some recent upticks. But if you look at any past time when rate cuts happened, they don't happen like this. Like there is this, there is a little bit of this, and then there is going this, and there is a little bit. So leading indicator by the bond yield, messaging from the bank, tone of the Bank of Canada. And the expectation is that we're going to see some relief start in Q2 of 2024. Now, we know what the banks do. They always keep the door open for any surprises that may happen. And if there is something wonky that happens, that may change the timing of when that rate cut could take place. But at least now we know it is happening.
Yeah.
And that's giving people hope.
And the thing about hope is something that I feel is a little bit funny, because people are like, oh, when this happens, then I'm going to take action. And the opportunities are now.
Yes,
because
absolutely.
If we wait till that happens, if we wait till the, you know, Bank of Canada or, you know, someone wakes up and says, okay, now today it's, we're going to drop it by 50 basis points. And that's going to be a frenzy.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And so the opportunities are now.
I can't agree more with you. The opportunities are now. If you, back of the napkin math, take a property today, let's say at 500,000, and you're buying it at a rate of 6 point something or 5 point something, so the rates are still high. Compare the savings, all right, to what's going to happen when the rates go down to 3 point something and now prices would go up by, let's say, another 100,000, because there is pent up demand and you're going to see that, yeah, it may not cash flow today, but if you're buying in a good market and you know what the plan is to make it cash flow when the rates go down or by adding units, you're actually ahead of the game buying at higher rates at discounted prices versus later on once the market goes, okay, now we have the relief, let's go. And the prices, and we saw that happen in May.
Yeah.
In May, if you remember, the bank signaled that they're going to pause. I saw it come on my end as a mortgage broker. I'm like, what just happened?
Yeah.
Competitive offers, firm offers.
Let's go.
So yeah. I agree with you. Now is the time.
Yeah.
Now is the time to position capital. Now is the time to make moves.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you're going to get a better price because of where the interest rates are.
Yeah.
Versus when everybody and their grandmother thinks they're an investor all of a sudden again.
Yeah, yeah.
So I love that. Now, one thing that you talked about, which I live just looking at the bond yield. That's all I do in my office. Like when the bond yield goes down, I'm like, it's like I start celebrating because I'm always, we're closing deals and all of our interest rates are fixed from the bond market.
Yes.
Can you explain in layman terms the difference between commercial borrowing and how that the interest rates are set versus residential? Because I love explaining that to people because I'm a multifamily guy. I'm the big commercial investor. And for me, it just makes more sense. Longest amortizations, cheapest interest rates. Most people don't even realize that that even exists.
Yes.
So let's demystify it for them. And you can explain to them how the bond market works.
Okay, so when it comes to interest rates, there are two flavors, as you know. There are the variable rates and there are the fixed rates. And the variable rates are based on the central bank's what's called overnight rates. You get your rate through a lender. So these lenders go and base the rate they're going to give you on something behind the scene. When it's variable, it's based on the Bank of Canada. That's their cost of money. And then they lend it to you at a higher rate and make the difference in their pocket. So variable rates are based on the overnight rates and they fluctuate. Fixed rates, whether you're actually in residential or in multifamily, the bonds, the Government of Canada bonds play a big role in the pricing of fixed rate mortgages. So that is the place where the banks go and quote unquote buy money, buy their money. They turn it around into fixed rate loans that they package on the residential side or on the commercial side. The difference between fixed rates in the residential space and the commercial space based on the bond yield is that in residential, they can lock it in and they can give you the certainty of what your rate is going to be, let's say, within 120 days. In commercial, most lenders or a lot of lenders cannot lock the rate until you're close to getting a deal done. So sometimes the lenders call and say, okay, you're closing in 3 days, 2 days, the rate is this. Do you want to lock in? That's how they do it. In the CMHC world, in the commercial CMHC, they use the Canada mortgage bonds. Mm-hmm. So it's essentially the same concept as the Government of Canada bonds, but it's a cheaper facility, and therefore you get better rates on the CMHC front.
Which is exciting.
Absolutely. I mean, the rates, I think I checked today, and the CMB or the Canada mortgage bond was at 3 point something. So you add...
Depending on your lender. And who
depending
you
on
with,
your yeah. lender, yes, obviously. So that's not the rate you're going to get, but the lenders take that number, add their margin to it.
Yeah, depending on the relationship you built with
them.
Of
course, yeah. Yeah, and then they offer it to you. But yeah, the rates in commercial CMHC right now are lower than residential.
Absolutely. And I would say it's going to continue to trend that way because you need to stimulate building and creation of units. And if they were to go up, I would say the government has to figure out how to pay it down, which leads me to another question. The idea with commercial rates where you can buy down your rate. Mm-hmm. And I know that people would appreciate learning about that, you know, especially from you that this is kind of like, this is your field.
Yes.
And when should we buy down a rate? What is the cost of buying down a rate? And what does it even mean to talk about buying down a rate? Because this is, you know, this is probably something that most people don't know about.
That is a very complex question to answer in a few paragraphs, but let me see how I can go about this. So let's say you got a building and that building qualifies for a $3 million loan. And at the time of approval, you know, the rate was 4 point something, right? So the debt coverage of the building at that rate allows it to qualify for that $3 million loan. Between the time you got qualified to the time you closed the deal, right, the rates have gone up. And that happened, I think, in 2020 or 2021. There was a time where the bond market was going up, up, up.
Well, it happened in November. November, I think we saw a big hike.
Yes, yes, you're right. So now, because in commercial financing, it's the building that qualifies primarily for the loan, and that is connected to the rate that was used to qualify it. If the rate goes up, technically, you would be getting a lower loan. So as an investor, you have the option to go to the lender and say, Mr. Lender, I want to keep my rate at the 4 point something, and I am going to quote unquote buy it down. Now it's 5. You qualified me at 4.5. So for that half a point, I'm willing to use some of the money that I'm getting to bring that rate down so I can continue to qualify for the $3 million.
And get the money that you were expecting
you
in the first place.
You get the money that was you're expecting in the first place. Exactly. Yeah. So that is what's called the buy down. How do they actually calculate it behind the scene is quite complex, and I can't explain it in layman terms, how they actually go about that buy down. I have the formulas, but I can't explain it.
You're so knowledgeable. And I wanted to have like conversations where, you know, someone's going to get something out of this interview. If someone was going to work with you, what should they expect?
Strategy. Our approach to financing is about strategy. Because I came from a wealth management background and I live by the concept of planning, I took that mentality to the mortgage world. So on the residential side, for example, we have become known for what's called the financing roadmap, which is the roadmap we give investors on how they're going to go about financing the portfolio that they want and the next set of properties. Where many just think about the current deal, we think 3-4 steps ahead. So that's on the residential. On the multifamily, it's the same thing. If somebody comes to me and says, Dalia, I want to buy this building, and I have partners, I have corporations, I'm thinking about this and this and that, I'm going to renovate it, I'm going to reposition it, then I'm going to do this. Our team thinks strategy. Okay, you told us what you want to achieve. Now let us connect the dots for you and help you plan out where's the money going to come from? How do you structure the deal? What you should expect in terms of things? How do you get ready? So it's all about strategy. It's not about saying, oh, you qualify for $1 million and your rate is going to be X. Or when you have a deal, please bring it over and we will do it. Well, it's all about strategy.
That's what a mortgage broker would say, but not the mortgage broker. Because you have to understand the person and what they're trying to accomplish.
Absolutely.
To help them.
Absolutely.
I love that.
Yeah.
You know, this has been incredible. Thank you for stopping by. I really do appreciate it because I know it was like kind of short notice.
When Alfonso says come, I will come.
What's a mantra? What do you live by? Like Dahlia, what is that inspirational quote or what's that mantra that you live by?
That's what my tattoo says. You see, this is a tattoo that I have here to remind myself of what I live by. So what I live by, so this is the Om sign, and this is actually a sun. Mm-hmm. And the Om sign, these are, for those who know the sign, these are the different levels of consciousness. So for me, what I learned over time is in order to grow anything, whether it's to grow a business or to grow, raising your level of consciousness and growing as a person mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, is going to determine how far we can go. So I remind myself every day of that and work on different aspects. That's something I live by. And then the sun, well, it goes with the yellow that I'm wearing today. The
Which
sun,
is, I looked at you when you came in, I was like, let's go.
Let's go.
It's vibrant, it's bright, it's loud, it sings, right?
Yes. Energy, hope are two big things that I live by. I believe energy is everything and staying hopeful, regardless yeah. of the clouds that sometimes pass through, whether they're, you know, financial or a relationship, everything is temporary. The cloud passes and the sun comes back out again. So these are the two things that I learned over time. It took me a while to decide to put it on a tattoo, but that answers hopefully the question.
I love that so much. Come again. We're going to do this again. This is a part, let's say this is part one.
Yeah.
And all Dahlia's information will be right in the show notes so they can get a hold of you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And we'll see you guys at the top.
Thank you.
Woo!
Thanks for listening to the Wealth Genius Podcast. If you have a question or comment about something you heard today, reach out to the Godfather via social media or email him anytime. All that information is in the show notes. And of course, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode of the Wealth Genius Podcast. The Wealth Genius Podcast. Until next time, see you at the top.